Welcome back to Project Lehutei Sichas. We're coming to the end of a year of this project, so congratulations to all those who have faithfully followed the program, and may Hashem help for many years to come that we continue and grow in the study of the Rebbe's Torah and in Torah in general. We will be learning a Rashi Sicha. It is the second Sicha in volume 11, the second Sicha for Parshas Vo'era. Before we get into the Rashi, let's spend a few minutes on the background of the Pasuk, the setting, the meaning of the Pasuk first, and then we'll look at the Rashi and what the Rebbe comments, and the Rebbe's comments on this Rashi. The Parsha deals with most of the 10 plagues that Hashem brought on the Egyptians for their enslaving B'nai Yisroel, the children of Israel, and their refusal to release them, even when Moshe Rabbeinu, as an emissary of Hashem, came to Paroi and said that it was Hashem's wish that Paroi released them, he still wouldn't release them. So Hashem brought 10 makis upon him. 7 of those 10 are described in our Parsha Bo'era. The first 3 were Dom, blood, where the waters of Egypt turned to blood, Sfardea, frogs, where the country was completely overrun with a magefa of frogs. The third was lice, where everyone, man and lavdul beast, was stricken with lice. And we're going to learn about the fourth one, oroiv, a mixture of wild animals which descended upon Egypt and destroyed and damaged. That's what's called oroiv. The root of the word oroiv is to mix, to blend, la'arev, to blend together. In this case, it was a blend of various kinds of wild animals, as we will see in the Rashi. Now, the Rashi has 2 parts, and at first glance, they seem quite distinct from each other. But first, a technical point about the verb that Hashem uses when he told Moshe Rabbeinu to warn Paroi that he will send this plague upon him. He says, "Hineni mashliach becho." If you don't let the people go, I, said Hashem, will be mashliach. Now, mashliach sounds a lot like shaliach, which has to do with an agent, with someone or something which is sent. So at first glance, we would expect that mashliach means that Hashem will send upon the Egyptians the plague of wild animals, of oroi. But Rashi quotes from the Pasuk the words mashliach becho. Mashliach, whatever that means, we'll see, becho, on you. And Rashi explains, megare becho, I will provoke against you. And as support for this idea that mashliach doesn't necessarily have to do with sending, but it means provoking, Rashi quote the pasuk from the very end of Torah, Vishen behemois ashalach bom. I will ashalach, to be explained in a moment. The teeth of behemois, of animals. What ashalach? Again, it might sound like stand, but it means loshen shisui, inciter belaz, to incite. That's the Rashi. So what mashliach, I will provoke or incite against you the wild animals. So Rashi wants to say that here the word mashliach doesn't have the usual meaning of standing, it means inciting. How does Rashi know that in fact it doesn't mean the usual term of standing? First of all, the pronunciation ought to be mishaleach, to stand, rather than mashliach. Second of all, the standing should be first the description of what is sent, and then to whom it is sent. Here, the pasuk says, "Mashliach becho es ha'orev." I will be mashliach against you, the orev. So it should have been the other way. I will stand, if it meant stand, I will stand the orev against you. So why is it in this order that it is the first becho against you, and then it says what it is? Because it doesn't mean to stand. It means to incite against. So when you're inciting against, you have to immediately say, incite against whom? Then you can talk about what it is that you will incite against that person or people. But because that's why Rashi actually quotes the word bechor from the pasuk, against you from the pasuk, even though he seems to be explaining only the word mashliach, because it is the word bechor and the position where that word is written that teaches us that mashliach means to incite and not to stand. Third of all, the word lecho or becho. Becho is wrong. Becho means in you or against you. But if Hashem is standing, and that's the meaning of the word, he should be standing to you. So for all these reasons, Rashi does not want to learn that it refers to standing, but it means inciting. The third reason, again, that the word should not be becho, but lecho, so that word also proves that it doesn't mean standing, but inciting. And that's again why Rashi brings the word becho in his Dibur HaMaschil, in his citation from the Pasuk. That seems to be what Rashi is out to say. And in fact, the Meforshim of Rashi, the Mizrahi, the Maharal, all learn that way. But the Rebbe, there are difficulties. Number one, Rashi cites as proof that Mashliach can mean to incite. He quotes the pasuk, as I said, from the very end of Chumash, Parshas Hazinu, second last parsha of all five Chumashim. There's a much earlier citation that he could have brought from Chumash Vayikra, the end of Vayikra, where it says, "V'hishlachti bochem et chayas hasodeh." I will incite or provoke against you the beasts of the field. And since this is earlier, and since it deals with Chaya Satoda, the wild beasts of the field, it's more appropriate for illustrating the Oroiv than the Pasuk which Rashi does cite, which talks about the teeth of behemoths, domestic animals. Second of all, why, after explaining that it means not to send but to provoke, and bringing a pasuk to support that, why does Rashi still find it necessary to add loshen shisui, an expression of incitement? Is the word shisui more familiar to the student than the word megare, to provoke? No. Megare is found several times in Chumash. Shisui is never found in Chumash. So one doesn't explain better than the shisui doesn't explain better than megare. And if Rashi does find it necessary, why does he interpose his citation from Hazinu in between Loshen Megare, an expression of provoking, and Loshen Shisoi, and an expression of incitement? So why did he frame on either side of the citation each one of these meanings? Why not just say Meshasa? If the word Meshasa in sight is better understood than Megara, then that's the one that Rashi should have brought. So those are the Rebbe's three difficulties with Rashi. Perhaps you might add that Meshasa is the greater expression of more intense incitement than Megara, and that's what Rashi wants to say. It's not just provoking, but inciting. But still, that doesn't explain why Rashi doesn't put the two expressions together, Loshen Megara, Loshen Meshasa, provoking and inciting, which is the second question before. And furthermore, where did Rashi get it from, that here Hashem not only provoked but also incited? If the word mashliach means megare, to provoke, where did Rashi get it from that there's an additional point of meshasa, inciting? Next, Rashi continues to explain this pasuk, and he quotes the next two words, Hineni Mashliach Becho Est He'oroiv, the mixed multitude of animals, Est He'oroiv. And Rashi explains, what's oroiv? A mixture of what? Kol Mine Chayis Roes, all sorts of wild animals, Unechoshim Ve'akravim, and snakes and scorpions, birvuvia, all mixed together. And they would attack and destroy the Egyptians. That's one point. The Rashi continues in this same comment, something seemingly unrelated, and that is that in the homiletical literature of Medrash, there is found a reason, why this makke and why that makke. What is that? That Hashem conducted himself against the Egyptians, kisteder milchomois melochim bo aleim, Malchus, that Hashem, so to speak, waged battle against the Egyptians with the same tactics as earthly kings besiege and attack a city. when one army want to besiege the city of another king, then first of all, they messed up the sources of water of the inhabitants. They won't have what to drink. And clearly this matches up with the plague of blood, where Hashem turned the Nile and the rivers and streams of Egypt into blood, and they lost their main supply of water. The next tactic is to blow instruments, trumpets, all kinds of noisemakers, shofars, horns, to frighten them and confuse the defenders. That lined up, Rashi says clearly, in the first one he doesn't say clearly that it lined up with the plague of blood. We understand it. But in the second example of noisemakers, Rashi says clearly, so too the Tzfardim, the frogs, which were the second plague, would be mekarkerim, they would croak and they would make noise, as is written in the Medrash of Rabbi Tanhuma, what we call Medrash Tanhuma. That's the end of the Rashi. So the Rebbe, the source of Rashi is in the Medrash Rabbah, but Rashi changes from the language of the Medrash. The Medrash brings two opinions. What exactly was the Orev? One opinion, bears, lions, and leopards. Second opinion, hornets and mosquitoes. Those were the two opinions. Now, the fact that Rashi doesn't enumerate exactly what kind of animals they were, like the first opinion of the Medrash, is easily understood, because Rashi gives it a general term that they were all sorts of wild animals, especially since the pasuk itself doesn't force you to say that it was specifically bears and lions and leopards. So Rashi makes it generic, wild animals. Rashi doesn't bring the second example of the Medrash, which is the second opinion, which is hornets and mosquitoes, because the Medrash says that concerning the Sfardim, it is written that after the plague ended, the Sfardim, the frog, died. Why they died? Because of a dead frog is of no use to anyone. But in the case of the Oroiv, the mixture of wild whatever they were, it doesn't say that they died. It just says they were gone. They didn't remain. Why not? Because a dead wild animal is of benefit to people. You can use their hide and you turn it into leather, into parchment, all sorts of things. So Hashem didn't want the Egyptians to benefit from the plague. And therefore, when the plague was over, the animals, whatever the Orev was, disappeared. Now, that's what Rashi had already explained earlier in discussing the plague of frogs. So clearly, since the pasuk said that Hashem removed the Orev must be something of which is of value to people when dead. That's not hornets or mosquitoes. So Rashi doesn't want to learn that it was hornets and mosquitoes, like the second opinion of the Medrash. But when Rashi adds after saying that it was an assortment of wild animals which came all together, Rashi adds, and snakes and scorpions. Where did he got that from? If the term oroiv, a mixture of wild animals, includes nechoshim and akrab, snakes and scorpions, so why doesn't Rashi keep it generic, just as he did about all the other wild animals? If it's not included in the term oroiv, how does Rashi know that there were snakes and scorpions that attacked them? Second of all, when Rashi goes down to state that there is a homiletic explanation in the Medrash, why each particular makir was the way it was. And he explained that it parallels earthly kings' strategies and tactics when laying siege to a city. Why does Rashi wait with that explanation till the fourth makir? The Medrash is explaining why blood, why frogs, so why doesn't Rashi bring the Medrash there? Now, there are Meforshim, and the Rebbe brings from the Sifstei Chachomim, which is a super commentary, a collection of commentaries on Rashi, that in fact, the reason for the first three makos is not, according to Rashi, it's not like that Medrash. Because Rashi said earlier that when Hashem strikes a people, first, he destroys the false beliefs that they have, the false gods that they believe in. Since for Egypt, that false god was the Nile. The Nile brought sustenance to Egypt and therefore they worshiped it. So the first plagues, blood and frogs, both of which struck the Nile, were a strike against the gods of Egypt. That's the way Rashi understands it. Blood clearly is a Makkah plague on the Nile, and the frogs also emerged from the Nile, which is the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu was not the one to take his staff and strike the Nile in order to initiate the plague of frogs. It was Aaron. And Rashi said earlier, why Aaron, not Moshe? Because Moshe was saved by the Nile. That basket that was placed in the Nile by his mother, in order to save him, he shouldn't be drowned like other Jewish children were thrown into the river and drowned. But since Moshe was saved by the Nile, it is not fitting that he should strike the Nile. Aha! So the Makkah Tsfardeya of frogs is also considered a plague on the Nile. So this fits in with Rashi's comment that first Hashem strikes at the false gods of a nation before striking them. That's why he had these two plagues first. And the third one, which is lice. Lice, we find an interesting thing about it, that the Khartoumim, Paris wizards, couldn't produce the lice the way they did the other magical tricks which Moshe Rabbeinu did in Hashem's name. He turned water into blood and he turned a staff into a snake. They copied him. They copied blood, they copied the plague of frogs in a limited way. When it came to Kinim, they said, Etzba Elekim Hu, this is a finger of God. They couldn't reproduce the miracle, and it was clear that this is from Hashem. So that too is the way of striking the false beliefs, the beliefs of the Egyptians. So we have one, two, three The first three makos are explained according to Rashi as an attack against the false gods of Egypt. So Rashi doesn't need to explain about those three, why they came and why they were first. That's what the Sifte Chachomim brings from the Meforsh. And that's why Rashi waits till the fourth one to bring this Medrash about the tactics of Hashem paralleling the tactics of earthly kings. But said the Rebbe, that's very difficult to understand. And he asked four questions. First of all, actually five, six. First of all, if Rashi's intention in bringing the Medrash is to explain why Hashem brought the Makkah of Oroiv, then how can it be that when he cites the Medrash, he stops after the reason for the first two plagues, Dam and Tfadeh, blood and frogs, and he does not bring the part of the Medrash which explains why, in fact, Hashem brought the wild animals. And the Medrash says, the continuation of the Medrash that Rashi does bring is that the tactic of earthly kings is that after poisoning the water supply and after blowing all these noisemakers and they shoot arrows which pierce the bodies of the defenders, and that parallels Kinim lies. And then about the Oroiv, the Medrash says that they send foreign mercenaries against the defenders. And that is like the Oroiv, the wild animals which Hashem sent against the Egyptians. But Rashi doesn't bring that. He brings only the explanation for blood and frogs. So if his point in bringing the Medrash is to explain why wild animals, so why doesn't he bring the part of the Medrash that explains it? On the other hand, according to what we learned before from the Sifte Chachomim, why Rashi need not explain why Hashem sent the first three and why they were first, because Hashem strikes the false gods of a nation first. So Rashi seems to have changed his mind. Earlier he said that the reason why they were first is because they were Hashem's attack against the false gods of Mitzrayim. Now he says, well, the Medrash gives the reason that Hashem used the tactics of earthly kings, so he seems to be retracting. Third of all, Rashi has two parts, as we learned before. The one, what's the meaning of Oroiv, a mixture of wild animals, snakes, scorpions. Two, why did Hashem bring the Oroiv? And for that, Rashi cites the Medrash that there's a reason in Medrash Tanchuma for each of the Makos. But they're totally unrelated comments, first explaining what the Oroiv was, and then explaining why Oroiv. So Rashi should have put them in two different sections, as he does always when he brings two different comments, even on the same words. But whenever he brings two unrelated comments, he puts them into separate sections. Third of all, why does Rashi not show the parallel between poisoning the water supplies and the plague of blood. But when it comes to frogs, there he shows the parallel. Frogs croaked like the attackers make noise in order to frighten the defenders. Fourth, Rashi says that there is a reason in the Agodah, in the homiletical literature, for why each makkah came the way it did and its position. So why stress that this is homiletical? Seems to be quite simple. Fifth of all, why does Rashi, after saying that there's a homiletical reason in the Medrash and bringing it, he then concludes, as is found in the Medrash of Rabbi Tanhuma, not the way of Rashi generally to cite, to quote, to point to his sources, unless it adds to an understanding of its commentary. What is added by knowing that this is from the Medrash of Rabbi Tanhuma? And why not say right away, there's a homiletical reason in the Medrash of Rabbi Tanhuma that such and such is the reason for the plagues. Lastly, why does Rashi also cite from the Pasuk the word es he'oroiv? Since Rashi is only explaining the word he'oroiv, why is that es necessary? Why must he cite it? Okay, there are many questions here. All of these questions are explained by the Rebbe. There's one hinge on which all of them swing. One point. Unlike the previous three makos, which are described, what is blood? What's going to happen with blood? The waters of Egypt will turn to blood and you'll have problems. You won't be able to use, the Egyptians won't be able to use whatever they normally use water for, drinking, washing, bathing, etc. And so it's clear by the time the Pasuk tells us that the Nile was stricken by the staff and it all turned into blood, we know already what the plague is going to be. Likewise, in the case of the frogs, it describes the frogs will overrun Egypt. They'll be everywhere. They'll be in your kneading troughs and in your houses, in your beds. It'll be awful. And then the Pasuk describes how it actually happened. So again, by the time it happens, we know what's going to happen, what the nature of the plague is. Likewise, when it comes to lice, again, there's a description. Here, there's a warning to Paroi that unless you let the Bnei Yisrael, the children of Israel, go, Hashem will incite against him the Oroiv, which will fill all of Egypt. It doesn't yet say what the nature of that Oroiv. Doesn't describe it. Doesn't say how it will be detrimental to Egypt. All of a sudden, there's going to be an Oroiv undefined. So we must say, says the Rebbe, that the verb which is used to describe Hashem's striking Mitzrayim with a plague, that verb itself teaches us the nature of the plague. What is that? The verb is mashliach. Mashliach means, as Rashi says, not to send, but to incite. So we understand that this is the oroiv, the mixture is a mixture of things which are incitable. They're living creatures. When animals are incited, provoked, we understand that they bite and they do damage. So it's clear by the time you get to the word ha'oroiv, it's already clear that we're talking about something alive, which will be incited and will attack. All that's left to say about the oroiv is that it is an oroiv. It is a mixture, a blend of all kinds of wild animals. That's all the Torah describes about this plague. Since Torah enumerates only this detail about the plague, that it is an oroiv, it is a mixture. Apparently, this is the only remarkable thing about the plague, is that they came all together. Now, based on that point, our questions will be answered. Once we know that the only remarkable and miraculous thing about the oroiv was the fact that all sorts of different animals came together, that implies that, first of all, there were no domestic animals there. They're just chayes, beasts, because it would be quite an amazing thing if sheep would suddenly start attacking. That would be another wonder, another remarkable thing. But the pasuk stresses that all that was remarkable about the oroiv was that the different animals came in a mixture. Not that the animals were those which never ordinarily attack the placid, the domestic sheep, goats, cows. So surely it was not domestic animals. Second of all, it's clear that it wasn't necessarily bears and lions and leopards, because that would have involved another remarkable feat of bringing all these animals, which are not necessarily found anywhere near Egypt. Hashem would have had to gather them from afar, which would be another remarkable thing. So, since Torah does not make that part of the makkah, the only thing remarkable is that they came all together, so Rashi leaves out the description of bears, lions, leopards, and he just says chayes roes, wild animals, any animal which is normally found around Egypt suddenly came upon them in a swarm. Third thing that's implied by this is that the animals didn't burrow into the ground. It would be very unusual to have a leopard suddenly digging in into a hole in the ground. Now, the pasuk said that when Moshe warned Paro about the coming oroiv, he said, your homes will be filled with the oroiv. And the oroiv will also be in the land upon which they are. They will come against your people and your houses and upon the land upon which they are. Who? Upon they are? Oroiv is a singular. So what will fill the land? Where the oroiv is will be filled with the oroiv. And it should have said, who oleho? The land upon which it, the oroiv, is upon. Since it says in a plural, it apparent that we're talking about the land underneath the Egyptians and the houses of the Egyptians, the land upon which they, the Egyptians and the houses, they will, that land, earth, will be filled with the oroi. Where do you have wild animals burrowing in? And if they did, that would be another remarkable thing about the oroi, which is not mentioned. So based on that, again, we must say that the meaning of that the Oriv will fill the ground, the land upon which the Egyptians stand and the houses stand, must be talking about certain kind of creatures which normally burrow in the earth and they attack. But that snakes and scorpions, and that's why Rashi adds those in order to explain the term Ha'adoma Sherheim Oleo, the land, the earth upon which they stand. Now, there's still explanation needed, said Rebbe. What's so great about the fact that all the animals came together in a swarm? That's the only thing that the Pasuk stresses, that it was a swarm of animals. To explain that, Rashi brings the Medrash. There is the Medrash which teaches us about the Makis, that they followed the pattern of an earthly army attacking. And Rashi only brings up to the second one. Why? Because mainly Rashi wants to explain the Makkah of Oroid based on the Medrash, which talks about the Tzfardei, the frogs. What is that? It is the tactic of an attacking army to frighten the inhabitants, to do all kinds of things. In the case of the frogs, it was their croaking and the noise. But in the case of the oroiv, what frightened them was this amazing swarm of animals coming all together, whatever they were. Wild animals from all directions, of all kinds. Nobody ever saw such a thing. That frightening, that add to the fright of the Makkah. And that was the point of Rashi's bringing this Medrash. Not that Rashi wanted to teach us why did Hashem bring an Oroiv, then Rashi wouldn't have waited till the fourth one. In fact, Rashi doesn't hold like the Medrash that the first three Makkahs were for the reasons, like the Medrash says, to poison the water supply and to frighten them with the croaking and to like shoot arrows into their bodies. No, Rashi maintains, like he said earlier, that the first three were to strike against the gods of Egypt. So why does he bring this Medrash? Only to point out what's so important about this swarm of animals is the fright effect, the confusion, that they're all coming together and that confuses the enemy. And that leads to another discussion, which we'll have to only address briefly because of time constraints. The first three Makkos have no mention about what happened to Bnei Yisrael at the time when these Makkos struck Egypt. In the fourth Makkah of Oroiv, suddenly it says that Hashem says, I will set apart Bnei Yisrael in the land of Goshen, And there will be no oroiv, no attack of wild animals. Why didn't Hashem say so in the case of the blood and the frogs and the lice, that he will set aside the Bnei Yisroel and they will not suffer the Makkah? So there's a major argument between Rishonim, whether in fact the plagues of blood, frogs, lice struck Bnei Yisroel too or not. Ibn Ezra says that in fact, if you follow the line of the Pasuk, that only in the fourth plague does Hashem say, I will set aside the Bnei Yisroel from the Egyptians and they will not experience the plague of Oroiv. So that implies that the first three were in fact upon Bnei Yisroel too. Many others argue against the Ibn Ezra, particularly the Radbaz, Reb David ben Zimra, the Rebbe quotes, addresses the Ibn Ezra directly and says what the Ibn Ezra says is unthinkable, especially since it is implied in the Pasuk that is wrong. It didn't strike they didn't strike Bnei Yisroel, because it says that the Egyptians couldn't drink from the Nile when it turned into blood. The Egyptians dug around the Nile to find water, which implies that the Eden didn't have to dig around. They had water. They could drink from the waters of the Nile, which did not turn into blood for them. And likewise, in the case of frogs, it says that when Hashem said he will remove the frogs, the frogs will stop, they'll go away from you, is the blessing Paroi, and from your houses and from your servants and your people. Again, that implies that the frogs were not a problem for Bnei Yisroel. There's a middle of the road opinion of the Rambam, which believe, but at any rate, what does Rashi hold about that? Since Rashi doesn't explain any answer to the question of why only in the fourth Makkah does it say that Hashem will set aside Bnei Yisroel from the Egyptians, apparently Rashi also agrees that the first three Makkahs were attacked Bnei Yisroel too. But however we'll answer these questions that we learned before, that the Radbaz brings against the Ibn Ezra, he proves from the implication of the Psukim, however we'll answer them, there's one final question that the Radbaz says, I don't understand. If the Makkahs struck Bnei Yisroel too, so what kind of sign would that be for Paroi that he must let Bnei Yisroel go? They too were stricken. That's a difficult question. How would Rashi answer that? Says the Rebbe, that is answered by Rashi's previous comment about the first three plagues. The first three plagues were a strike against the Egyptians' God, the Nile, whatever they believed in. It wouldn't help them if Bnei Yisroel were also stricken by that plague. They also suffered from a lack of water or from frogs, because the main point is that the God of Egypt had been stricken. And that was stricken either way, whether it was the Egyptians who suffered or the Bnei Yisroel suffered. It doesn't change. Only when it comes to Oroiv, which now the point is to strike the Egyptians themselves, then there it's important that the B'nai Yisrael was set apart from the Egyptians and they didn't experience the Makkah. On a deeper level, the Rebbe explains, Orev means a mixture. Normal border barriers disappear. Animals which don't keep each other company in nature suddenly accompany each other. So one might think that there are other barriers, other separations which are found in the world also would disappear. Maybe the idea of Orev means that everything blends with everything. Whatever is normally separate from other things is suddenly blended together. Like what? Like B'nai Yisrael and other nations. We say Hamavdil, Hashem separated us, Ben Yisrael or Amim, between Yisrael and other nations. So when there is an Orev, one might think that in that case, there's also a blend of B'nai Yisrael and Egyptians. Chas v'shalom, therefore, Hashem said, I'm going to make a sign, a produce, that B'nai Yisrael will not be stricken. They are still separate from the Egyptians. The Rebbe points out practically that nowadays, when there's more of a danger of an intermingling between B'nai Yisrael and other nations of assimilation far more than previous generations, how much more so we have to strengthen that barrier, that havdalah, that separation, B'nai Yisrael or Amim, and we are assured, said the Rebbe, that if we strengthen that separation, there will be no separation between us and Hashem Yisborach, and he will bring us, each and every one of us, to a proper tshuva, and we will be redeemed with Mashiach Tzidkenu.